And now for reading and writing and radio.
Alice did not wish to offend the Dormouse again, so she began very cautiously. "But I don't understand. Where did they draw the treacle from?" "You can draw water out of a water well," said the Hatter. "So I should think you could draw treacle out of a treacle well, eh, stupid?"
The author of that was Lewis Carroll. But it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
That bit from Alice in Wonderland needs a mite of explaining to American children, or you'll feel even stupider than Alice. Drawing, of course, is pulling up in a bucket. And treacle, in England, is the name for syrup or a thick molasses. And so Alice really wasn't stupid at all in thinking that a treacle well is pretty strange. One reason Alice is such an uncomfortable book for the reader is that she can never say anything right or do anything right in Looking Glass Land or in Wonderland. And by their standards, she's always stupid. Alice says, "I didn't know that Cheshire cats always grinned. In fact, I didn't know that cats could grin." "They all can," said the Duchess, "and most of them do." "I don't know of any that do," Alice said very politely, feeling quite pleased to have got into a conversation. "You don't know much," said the Duchess, "and that's a fact." In another place, Alice repeats some poetry for the caterpillar, and he says, "That is not said right." "Not quite right, I'm afraid," said Alice timidly. "Some of the words have got altered." "It is wrong from beginning to end," said the caterpillar decidedly, and there was silence for some minutes. And in the Alice books, since we all identify with her, the story is from her point of view, we see it as she sees it, we're uncomfortable too, for it's not pleasant always to be wrong, to be contradicted, to look stupid. Alice is a child. Children are often told they're stupid by their elders, and this includes older children, and made to feel stupid. It's a rather natural situation. Children are small, they're inexperienced, they're not as skillful. A baby or a very small child doesn't realize it, but once you're older, you do. You can compare. You can see that others are better, or that they seem to be better. However, feeling stupid or actually doing stupid things isn't confined to childhood. Adults can be plenty stupid. A long time ago, I read a review of a book that was entirely about stupidities. I've often wished I'd gone out and bought it. I do remember two things about it. One was an example of stupidity. After Pearl Harbor in World War II, when the United States suddenly called up thousands of men for service, there weren't enough army camps to hold them all. So the colleges, which were emptying of young men in the dorms and classrooms at that time, were all enlisted to house these batches of soldiers and to teach them certain basic things, math and electrical theory and so forth. There was a long list of these soldiers to be parceled out, and the list was in alphabetical order by the last name. Some high mucky muck there in Washington divided up the list by simply counting down it, to how many a certain college could handle and drawing a line. The result was that one small college in Texas was sent 50 soldiers, all of whom had the last name Brown. I guess they found out their stupidity before they got to the Smiths. My other remembrance was a comment on the author. The reviewer said that as the book went on, piling stupidity on stupidity, the author seemed to get more and more hysterical, as well as more and more resigned about the basic stupidity of the human race. Well, I've done stupid things, I can't deny it. Most of the ones that I recognize as stupid haven't been very harmful. For instance, not long ago, I put the gallon of milk on top of the car while I opened it, and then I drove away, leaving the milk there. Well, it wasn't on top of the car when I got home, and I drove all the way back to the supermarket and couldn't see milk on the highway anywhere, nor in the parking lot. It had simply vanished. I've also done that with books on top of the car and papers, and that's a little more serious. You can go and buy more milk, but the books are sometimes gone forever. I asked a group of your teachers in a class that we were in to write on their stupidities, and many were the splendid stupidities that they'd committed. Joan Meyer of Taylorville wrote, "Are you stupid to hit a cord attached to a pot of boiling water in a motel in St. Louis and have it land on your head, back, and both ears at 10 a.m. in the morning, and then go to a football game at Busch Stadium between the Cardinals and Dallas with second-degree burns and a can of unguentine?" She had her husband drive her to the emergency room after the game. Now there's a real cardinal lover for you. And then she goes on, "Are you stupid when you go into a strange grocery store and immediately drive your cart into a 6-foot-high display of Wheaties? Are you stupid when you get all dressed up for a coffee, ring the doorbell with your white-gloved hand, and find that you are a week early?" She lists other good stupidities. Ethel Kunzman of Verdun writes, "My day-to-day stupidities include making tomato preserves the old way, because with sure gel it never gets thick enough, and then getting it so thick it won't spread. Or losing my scarf in a store and finding it on a rack of new scarves. I always felt the manager didn't really believe it was mine." Therese Clark, also from Taylorville, writes, "How about going to the refrigerator, opening the door, and having no idea what I'm there for, and having to return to a reenactment of what I was doing before I could remember what I forgot? Or dialing a number on the telephone, hearing a familiar voice answer, but forgetting who I called? Or having someone ask me for my phone number and standing there for a few blank look seconds while I try to remember? Or fussing and fuming in the dark, trying to open the front door with my car keys? Or calling to find out whose turn it is to have bridge tonight and finding out it's mine, or yelling at one of my own kids and rattling through 5 names before I get the right one, or dashing to the grocery store for much-needed items and discovering I left my list at home. Forgetful, absent-minded, call it what you may. By any other name, the way you feel is still spelled S-T-U-P-I-D, eh?" And then she adds on a little P.S., a joke from a friend of hers at Taylorville who also teaches there. "Darrell told me a funny story about a man whose wheel fell off his automobile right in front of an insane asylum. An inmate was standing on the inside of the fence watching as the man pondered how to get his wheel back on with no nuts and bolts. Finally, the inmate suggested that he take one nut and bolt from each of his 3 other wheels and use them to hold the 4th wheel on, so he could drive into town and buy 4 new nuts and bolts and fix his car. The man then said, 'How come you're in that place since you're so smart?' And the inmate answered, 'I'm in here because I'm crazy, not stupid.'" Well, there's some grown-up ones. I asked a group of children, too, to tell their stupidities. I was in England recently and visited the 5th grade of Cumnor School near Oxford. We had a good time talking about stupidities, among other things, and then we decided to record some of these stupidities for you, for this program. Listen carefully, for my tape recorder wasn't too hot, and these boys and girls speak with a British accent. They sometimes use different words, too, for some of our ordinary ones. I chose the stories that came through the clearest. Here's Anthony Hobbs.
My name is Anthony Hobbs, and when I was about 7 years old, my father and I were unhitching a trailer off the back of our Land Rover, and I forgot to put the brake on. And when my father pulled away, the trailer ran down the hill and into the river, and it just missed a car, and then we had to get a tractor to pull it out.
In this next, Jonathan is talking about Bonfire Night, which is Guy Fawkes Night, and that's something like our 4th of July.
My name is Jonathan Lewis. When I was about 4, we went up to Headington on Bonfire Night to a bonfire display and fireworks. My parents and my brother and sister got out to see how much the tickets were, and I got frightened and I ran the window down and jumped out the window and hurt my head.
You heard the class laugh there. This next person describes a stupid place to play badminton.
My name is Arlene McIntyre. When me and my brother, we were wanting to have a game of badminton, and we have an extension which is one story high, and we took our shuttlecocks and our badminton rackets and climbed up the television pole. When we got onto the balcony, we had a game of badminton, and then the shuttlecock fell down. So Adrian climbed down the television pole, and he fetched the shuttlecock. Then he came up. We were making so much noise that my mother, who was in the lounge, heard us, and she came up and told us to come down immediately.
Thank you, students at Cumnor School. Shall we send you some of our stupidities? Stupidities are a favorite subject for books and stories. You know of Winnie the Pooh, who humbly admits that he's a bear of little brain and repeatedly proves it. For instance, when he and Piglet go hunting and nearly catch a woozle, only to discover that they've been going in circles, following their own tracks in the snow and finding more and more as they keep circling back on themselves. Christopher Robin points out Pooh's error. "I see now," said Winnie the Pooh. "I have been foolish and deluded," said he, "and I am a bear of no brain at all." "You're the best bear in all the world," said Christopher Robin soothingly. Then there's the Peterkin Papers by Lucretia Hale, in which each chapter recounts a Peterkin stupidity, and every stupidity is solved by the lady from Philadelphia. Here's one. Elizabeth Eliza had a present of a piano, and she was to take lessons of the postmaster's daughter. They decided to have the piano set across the window in the parlor, and the Carters brought it in and went away. After they had gone, the family all came in to look at the piano, but they found the Carters had placed it with its back turned towards the middle of the room, standing close against the window. How could Elizabeth Eliza open it? How could she reach the keys to play upon it? Solomon John proposed that they should open the window, which Agamemnon could do with his long arms. Then Elizabeth Eliza should go round upon the piazza and open the piano. Then she could have her music stool on the piazza and play upon the piano there. So they tried this, and they all thought it was a very pretty sight to see Elizabeth Eliza playing on the piano while she sat on the piazza with the honeysuckle vines behind her. It was very pleasant, too, moonlight evenings. Mr. Peterkin liked to take a doze on his sofa in the room, but the rest of the family liked to sit out on the piazza. So did Elizabeth Eliza, only she had to have her back to the moon. All this did very well through the summer, but when the fall came, Mr. Peterkin thought the air was too cold from the open window, and the family did not want to sit out on the piazza. Elizabeth Eliza practiced in the mornings with her cloak on, but she was obliged to give up her music in the evenings, the family shivered so. One day, when she was talking with the lady from Philadelphia, she spoke of this trouble. The lady from Philadelphia looked surprised and then said, "But why don't you turn the piano around?" Elizabeth Eliza went home directly, and with the help of Agamemnon and Solomon John, turned the piano round. "Why did we not think of that before?" said Mrs. Peterkin. "What shall we do when the lady from Philadelphia goes home again?" Many fairy and folk tales are based on stupidity, on foolish people. Consider the three wishes, where the husband wishes the sausages on the end of his wife's nose, or is it the other way around? Some are called Clever Elsie or Clever Hans, but the main character is really plenty stupid. It just turns out well. Didn't you always think Jack was pretty stupid to trade his cow for a handful of beans? How'd he know that they were magic beans and would lead up to the giant's castle in the clouds with the gold harp and the hen that laid the golden eggs for him to steal? A book you may particularly enjoy is Leta the Goat by Isaac Bashevis Singer. There's a story in it called The First Schlemiel, and that's a word that means fool. Another story, The Mixed Up Feet and the Silly Bridegroom, tells of four sisters who slept in one bed, but one morning they didn't get up to do their chores. They claimed that in the night their feet had gotten mixed up, and of course they couldn't get up because they might get up on the wrong feet. So the mother goes to see the wise man of Chelm, and he ponders the problem and suggests that she hit the bed with a heavy stick, and perhaps in the pain, each girl will grab her own feet, and then they can be identified. The mother does just that. The girls screech out and grab their own feet and jump out of bed, and all is well, and all compliment the wise man of Chelm on his wisdom. I talked to my own kids and asked them for their stupid stories, but they wouldn't tell me any. They said that they were too painful. Also, they said that I was their mother, and they weren't about to tell me any stories about their stupidities that I didn't already know. Demi said, "I don't quite believe in stupidity." She went on to say that she thought it was awareness or non-awareness. She said she felt stupid when she felt inadequate, when somebody tried to help her and she couldn't understand, when people glared at her for something. She says she sometimes acted stupid on purpose. For instance, when she feels she's being pushed into an action that she's not comfortable with, or that the other person isn't listening, or that nothing seems to be thought out properly. But back to you and me and our own stupidities. I guess I believe in stupidity, at least some of the time. I know, for instance, that we humans are plenty stupid. We're clever and stupid. You only need to look around you to see evidence of amazing cleverness and vast stupidity. What about a city that pours sewage in a river, and downstream another city has to treat the water to make it fit to drink? But for our writing, let's concentrate on our own examples of personal day-to-day stupidities. Pat Rafferty at Little Flower School in Springfield suggested this topic and told how his mother baked the frozen pizza with the cardboard under it. Pat surely has committed his own stupidities, as have I. We all do. And we hope to be understood and forgiven for this human frailty. There are some people who never make mistakes and never forgive. Do you know any of those? Sometimes we're accused of being stupid when we're not. Or we get the blame for someone else's stupidity, or have to clean up the mess that stupidity has caused. What's the difference between stupidity and plain not knowing? Are there some people who always make you feel stupid? Do you think you ever make any other people feel stupid? Eh? Stupid?
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.